This talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel Sensei at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Once a monk went to call on a hermit nun. The monk asked, "Do you have any disciples?" The woman said, "Yes." The monk said, "Where are they?" She said, "The mountains, rivers, earth, the plants and trees are all my disciples." The monk said, "Are you a nun?" She said, "Well, what do you see me as?" He said, "A layperson." The woman in the hut said, "You can't be a monk." The monk said, "You shouldn't mix up Buddhism." She said, "I'm not mixing up Buddhism in this way." The monk said, "Aren't you mixing up Buddhism in this way?" And she said, "You're a man, I'm a woman. Where has there ever been a mix-up?" So I thought this would be a good thing to work with after a woman's session, wild grasses that we've been in for the last few days. Aren't you mixing up Buddhism? So what did the Buddha teach? How do we mix up Buddhism? Buddhism. And what is Dharma? The Buddha said, "I taught one thing and one thing only. Suffering and the cause of suffering. Every teaching I have is about that, a path that leads to the cessation of suffering. Each teaching is addressing these four noble truths of our human condition." So this story is part of a collection referred to as the Kawaihai Koans, developed by Eiken Roshi and his students, and it was a very early attempt to bring in and rediscover a women's lineage, women ancestors in Buddhism. It was written in 1986, the book. So there wasn't a lot of literature available, these stories of the women ancestors, the Theragata, was limited in book form, though it was there. It had to be uncovered, discovered, and written down for us today. And so there's a lot more available. And as we know, we're about to celebrate our 40th year on the mountain here, and we just brought in the lineage of women ancestors maybe 6 or 7 years ago now. So it's a bit glacial. And I gave a talk in the Wild Grasses session, which read as follows. Once a monk on a pilgrimage met an old woman living alone in a hut. The monk asked, "Do you have any relatives?" She said, "Yes." He asked, "Well, where are they?" And she answered, "The mountains, rivers, and the whole earth, the plants and trees, are all my relatives." So I'm not sure if this is the same part, and then there's another part where it goes into the rest of the discussion. And in that talk, I spoke about no reference points and the aloneness, a woman alone. As koans go, in this story, a reality is being presented. And if, as you sit with it, more and more different levels come up. So the monk in the story comes across a woman, a hermit nun, practicing the original way the Buddha did in the forest, in nature. And often in many of the koans, we find wandering monks struggling with basic existential questions. And sometimes women appear not usually as the wanderers, but as on the side of the road, as an old vendor, kind of wise crone woman in her crone years, selling tea cakes, little refreshments, but she's kind of an adept. And sometimes the woman is a disciple. There's a few cases where she's actually a teacher in her own right, or she's an old woman in a hut, challenging seekers to question and present their understanding of the Dharma live, for real, like no dress rehearsals. Right there on the spot, she just goes right after them. So here this woman in the hut challenges this male monastic to question and perhaps throw away all his preconceived ideas and concepts about Buddhism, about disciples, about lay people, about nuns. So it's something we could all benefit from, this interaction. That's the point. She goes right in for the juggler and cuts away his dependence on categories to have him come possibly find a place of no categories. So when we, of course, sit in a period of zazen and look at our own minds, we see all of our constructions moment after moment after moment, perhaps. Worlds appear and disappear, memories, people, situations, wars and truces. What is it when that stops? What remains when the mind is no longer constructing, no longer bringing forth, when all self-awareness, all sensations, inside and outside, cannot be found? The world of no thingness. Maybe we call it emptiness, that is at the heart of what the Buddha taught. You can see why when Buddha went to teach the Prajnaparamita, 6,000 people walked out. They weren't ready to see that there was no thingness to anything, no categories, no reference points. So he had to back up a little bit. Prajna being the wisdom before we know. All phenomena are the forms of suchness, are the nature of suchness, are the body of suchness, are the mind of suchness, are the world of suchness, are the clouds and rain of suchness, are the walking, standing, sitting, and lying down of suchness, are the sorrow and joy, the excitement and calm of suchness, are the staff and whisk of suchness, are the flower twirling and the smiling of suchness, are the Dharma transmission and intent to transmit of suchness, are the study and practice of suchness, are pine-like constancy and the bamboo-like interruptedness of suchness. And when I found this passage, I realized yesterday I read to Jisho what was on my Roksu from Shugen Roshi. And he wrote, you know, that's the Roksu is the square piece that you see. All things are reality, thusness, mind thusness, sadness and joy thusness, cloud and rain thusness. So there it was again. It's been beautiful. All dharmas are forms of emptiness is another way of speaking of suchness or thus. The merging of every duality, the unity of every opposite. So we speak of it in terms of what we chanted today, the identity of relative and absolute. Relative is the phenomena. Everything that we know, taste, touch, smell, think, experience. And the absolute is that which has no body, no characteristic, no time and space. Each abides in its own Dharma state. You are like this, I am like this. So both of those mutually arising. When a thought appears, it seems to be born. It wasn't there a moment ago, and now something is there. There is somethingness, a sense of existence, of having come into being. So very early in this dialogue, the old woman responds, in her response to monastic attempts, to say something about how he's trying to place her as a teacher, a student. She says, yes, I have many disciples. Where are they? She said, the mountains, rivers, and earth, the plants and trees are all my disciples. So this hermit nun has a mind like the sky. She's a real bodhisattva, wanting to blow open his fixed views. She displays the greatest love to try and free him. She engages, affirms she has many disciples, the mountains, rivers, earth, the plants, and trees. And he still doesn't understand her. I was thinking about this, I think I've told you this before, but the teachings originally were given orally, and they were memorized and then written down later. And so I like to practice reading aloud. I encouraged many of you to read sutras aloud to yourself, sing them, whatever way you can embody and hear the teaching. It's very powerful. So I like to go out on my back porch, and there's my disciples. Like the whole forest is there. Good morning, everybody. And the rocks and the trees. And I told you I have a few stuffed animals, which are great listeners. They never fall asleep. I have a tiger with bright blue eyes, a monkey, and a Cheshire cat who I love to look at because he's always smiling at my talks. It's the best. But those are my disciples. So right in his face, she's showing the whole universe is this very body. All beings are my disciples. All beings are her disciples. Nothing is separate from Dharma. But the monk presses name and form again. Are you a nun? Dogen wrote, everything, blossoming flowers, wild grasses, mountains, oceans, and rivers, is the body spirit of the original Buddha mind. This original mind is a chair, a bamboo, or a tree. So we too can look into our heart mind and locate what are the divisions we go right into. Above and below, intelligent, mediocre, me and them, people. This is our disease. This is our disease. In this, this is our disease of making painful, harming constructs, producing that illness of our great divide. We want to be close, but we chop it up. And sometimes we know it, and sometimes we don't. She is urging and plotting this monastic to find his questioning spirit in his view. She's blue sky, bright sun. There's no distinguishing east from west, yet acting in accord with the imperative still requires dispensing medicine where the sickness appears. So she's working it. Those of us who identify with the path of liberation, we know the only way in is through. To feel for ourselves the lies and the lives that have been passed on for thousands of years. And, well, the examples of what is real and true in a body. To experience the greatest love of the Buddha is to see the unity and deeply integrate it with every phenomena that appears before our eyes. That's what the Buddha taught. And we have to admit, we're ignorant. We've been ignorant. We are ignorant. Not this way, but just, yeah, it's part of the condition. And therefore, in many ways, we're unable to see the beauty of our differences in this unified way, the miraculous display of things in their own Dharma state. We chop it off by our views. So for us to get in there and observe the ways we have done this, we have to be interested and open in seeing clearly, not holding to fixed views, as we chant in the Karaniya Metta Sutra. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, is not born again into this world. We stop birthing it again and again. We clearly see the emptiness of all the five conditions and see that's necessary. That's what Avalokiteshvara was doing. Doing deep prajna paramita. Doing deep, being submerged in the knowledge before knowing. Clearly saw emptiness of all the five conditions, thus completely relieving misfortune and pain. And then the possibility of seeing self and other as one. We can see more clearly the gaps and continue. But we need to feel the hurt of what our ignorance does. We need to really feel it, not skip over. And not waste it. Use it to take up the urgency of seeing clearly. As though a fire upon our head. To identify how we perceive, then further to realize and undo how we've become mixed up. Topsy-turvy, as the Buddha used to say. We're topsy-turvy. Place limits on our full potential to experience liberation for complete human being. This is why number one on the Eightfold Path we're studying, what is it? Right view, right understanding. And this is not right as opposed to wrong. I like the Zenju said, it's complete, complete view, complete understanding. I like that better than right, because we always want to go, I have a wrong view. It's just not complete. I like that. But that complete view sets a direction. So it doesn't matter how long or how difficult our journey may be, if we're heading in the right direction and we keep going, we'll see more and more clearly. Our view. Right view is the precursor to the breakthrough of the Four Noble Truths, where we can see suffering, the cause of suffering, the path, the cessation, and the path. And of course, we need each other. We need Sangha. That's why it's a jewel. We have such perfectly crafted delusions that if we don't bump up against another one, that's how we get clear. Otherwise, we're in our own orbit. We are anyway, but you know, planets collide and they explode. Because this illness, our disease, keeps us from fully seeing ourselves and each other. And if we can't see it in ourselves, that's only as far as we'll see it in another. And who wants this? You know, we know it's not true. When we know it's not true, let me read what I wrote here. Yes, if we know it's not true, we might convince ourselves otherwise. Many do. We know this. If we don't know, what's our story? We have to know this because it's connected and affected by a large one. And we have to reclaim and say, yes, this happened, all of it. If not, we fall into the true meaning of ignorance, not knowing correctly. It's not just I didn't know, I had no idea, they did it. It's my mother's fault, totally. There's an innocent kind of ignorance of a short duration, but then there's a longer one. And we know the poison of this kind of ignorance is willful wrong knowing, willful forgetting. So I think anger has a willful momentum. I think greed has a willful momentum. So why wouldn't ignorance have a willful momentum to remain ignorant? We can't rest here in I didn't know, or it's someone else's fault. It's been too long. And this is where our liberation is really on the line. What's obscuring your birthright, my birthright, which is exactly love? The great love of the Buddha, that unity. How would you feel to be possessed thoroughly by love? I think we're afraid of the power of that. Holy cow. I mean, you know, we gotta have some little ugh to hold us somewhere, down or what, I don't know. I was thinking of, and I think this is, I was thought about how I would tell this, but I went to visit my parents when they had an apartment in Philly, which had, you know, it was a condo and it had a pool. And I was newly, freshly ordained, so my head was shaved. And it is a Jewish community, so that's important because that's the people there, and I know there's a history. So I'm a woman without hair going for a swim. So I didn't even think twice. I got in the pool, started swimming around, I was just doing laps, and I realized nobody was in the pool after a few minutes. Everyone left. I was swimming alone. And there was all this hubba bubba bubba on the side under an umbrella. And they were looking at me, and I suddenly came into focus. And then they pushed one woman out. And she said, I don't recognize you. Where are you from? What are you doing? And I said, I'm swimming. And I was like, I'm not going to do Dharma combat with this woman, you know. You know, where are you from? And I'm like, just answer her. My parents live here. What do you do? And I said, oh, I'm a female monastic. You know, the Dalai Lama? Oh, she's a female monastic. And suddenly a few more come over. And anyway, it was just, we did evolve into a nice conversation, and suddenly the pool started filling once. And she said, are you sick? That was the other thing. Are you sick? Because they were worried. They're older, and am I contagious? I'm in the pool. And they were in there. And we're in the soup. And there was another question. Are you sick? You know, another Dharma encounter. And that's when I said, no, I'm a female monastic. How would you feel to be possessed thoroughly by love? Are you a nun? She said, what do you see me as? Sadly, he bites the fishing hook. He cannot appreciate this response about his disciples. He's still suffering from hardening of the categories. Are you a nun? What do you see me as? A layperson. More categories. The woman comes back. You can't be a monk, because monks are supposed to have seen the Heart Sutra, you know. And I could see her big finger coming out right here. Not only to challenge, she's challenging him, be a true person, will you? Be a true person. Come forth as an embodied true person for real, completely empty, completely free, not bound by categories. Meet me, meet me. This is the liberation that is perfectly at home, moment to moment in the ordinary world, making our supper, being with our children, driving around, going to work, going to bed, interacting with all kinds of different people and things. So the monk says, you shouldn't mix up Buddhism. What is that about? And she reminds him of his filial duty as the son of a Buddha, of the Buddha, to see beyond appearances. The monk again presses name and form. You shouldn't mix up Buddhism. So, so deep in conceptual thought, he misses her grandmotherly kindness, her love. And we may share this same defensiveness when our own self-image is threatened. No? If we strip away everything, all the identities, monastic, mother, a teacher, a lawyer, what's left? That's what the Buddha asked. When we let go of the thinker, when we let go of the thoughts, when we let go of the thinker, what remains on your cushion? Many by identity have never felt here, belonging, categorized as less than human, we know this. So it has also been very important to also establish, yes, I am this, I am that. I am woman, hear me roar. Yes, I belong to this embodiment. And recognize too, I am enormous. Get used to it. To realize this is what the Buddha always taught. So I hope that we all know Buddhism isn't wearing robes, sitting cross-legged on cushions, going on retreats, being here on Sunday. It's wonderful. But what is it? The Buddha explicitly rejected phrasings like Buddhism, which imply an ism, or a philosophical stance or position or viewpoint. The Buddha emphasized that he was not expounding an opinion, but a path. And he always said, don't believe a word I say. test it in your own embodiment. He really meant that, because he knows that we're so apt to just gunk and follow. That's all he could say. Test it, test it, test it. He offered a way of life based on values and actions that lead to a holistic experience, a realization. The Dharma is truth. It can't be given. And the only choice we have is whether to try to be in relationship with the truth or to live in ignorance. To me, it seems like that. There's no other choice. She said, "I'm not mixing up Buddhism this way." And he again replies, "Aren't you mixing up Buddhism this way?" Finally, she responds, "You're a man. I'm a woman. Where has there ever been any mix-up?" When we experience mountains, the earth as our disciples, as our body, we recognize from the beginning there's nothing mixed up at all. Everything is already clear in front of us. You're a man, I'm a woman. This is the Dharma. And when I just say that's their line, there's many identities. I'm using those. But we have to actively engage if we practice the Buddha Dharma. We have to explore completely. How do I think of myself? How did I come to be? How did I get what I have? What land are we on? What is all of this? Dogen said, "The Buddha way is intrinsically accomplished and perfect. Peering into the nature of reality in this way is not specific to Buddhism." The Buddha way is intrinsically accomplished and perfect. In this way, it is not specific to Buddhism. Valleys are low, trees are tall, have greens. Some Buddhas are tall, some Buddhas are short. And we can see for ourselves, moment to moment, how these are exactly empty of being, not fixed, mixed the same. And this is the work, too, that we can come to this truth in our illuminated journals. It could light it up even further as we get close to things. And we're sitting, too. And we're studying the Dharma. And we make expressions. This is what the Buddha was about. He said, to look at these mixed up ways, look at how it lives in us, drives and even motivates us. And we need to grieve. Grieve that we didn't know any better. This mama can handle that. In a big way, to let this undo us. And if you haven't laid on the floor of this great mother in tears at some point, keep going. Keep going. It's the ceaseless creation of mind that often exhausts us. Building worlds, tearing them down, building worlds, tearing them down. We deserve a rest. Everybody deserves a true rest, the great peace. Stop the construction, stop creating, stop avoiding, stop denying, stop suppressing, stop destroying, stop stopping. These are just signs that we need to keep examining. All of it is about you and me. This life, this world we're living in. When we stay true to this, then this Sangha is healthy, the Dharma is radiant, and practice occurs. When we lose sight of this, then the radiance begins to dim. So in just this way, let's continue our practice of this great wisdom tradition. This is the gift we received from Buddha ancestors. When we practice sincerely and free our discriminating mind, this is how we repay the gift and offer it to others. How are we mixing up Buddhism? Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about our ongoing programs and residency opportunities, visit zmm.org.